KJAN, Radio Atlantic.
And at 8 o'clock, it's clear and 25 degrees in Atlantic after a low of 21. We look for sunny skies here today with a high of 52. Good morning. I'm Rick Hansen with KJAN News, brought to you by ASI, Audiology and Hearing Instruments in Atlantic. In the news this hour, gambling will shift from the Missouri River to a Council Bluffs hotel under a plan approved by the Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission. The commission backed the plan Thursday at a meeting in Johnston. The new casino will move from a riverboat to the first floor of Harrah's Hotel, replacing a convention center. It'll have 600 slot machines and 20 casino tables. The boat will then be put up for sale. The commission also approved an $8.5 million expansion at Prairie Meadows Racetrack and Casino in the Des Moines suburb of Altoona. News time is 8:01.
Excuse me?
I'm sorry.
Pardon?
What?
I didn't hear you. What'd you say?
This is Doug Leonard, audiologist at ASI. Even though there are many ways to politely tell someone you didn't hear them, not being able to understand what people are saying to you is frustrating for everyone. Because hearing loss happens gradually, many times you and those around you develop coping behaviors to keep the communication flowing. Speaking louder, lip reading, and eventually the frequent request to repeat. But because those behaviors don't address the real source of frustration, your hearing loss, it can become a hearing problem for everyone involved. The best way to avoid the frustration is to recognize the real culprit and to take action. A hearing evaluation is the first step. Even if what you're experiencing is a very mild hearing loss and hearing aids are not needed, knowing what's going on allows you to stay on top of your hearing loss. No one wants a conversation that revolves around,
excuse me?
I'm sorry.
Pardon?
I didn't hear you. What did you say?
Call today. ASI with offices in Atlantic, Audubon, Manning, and Carroll.
The financially troubled Xenia Rural Water District is resisting takeover efforts by the firm that insures the district's bonds. Assured Guarantee has gone to court seeking to fire the district's directors and to install new management. The district has debts of about $135 million. It owes about $2.5 million to Assured Guarantee, which made bond payments after the district defaulted. Xenia Board Chairman Dan Lovett said the district is doing everything it can to avert a takeover. Plans to pay off the debt include a rate increase that the board will consider on November 29th. Xenia's financial troubles were mostly caused by expansion plans that never materialized. The company serves about 9,400 customers in parts of 12 counties north and west of Des Moines. An index of economic conditions in 10 Midwestern and Western states has jumped for a third straight month, but the looming fiscal cliff and other factors have shaken confidence in the region's economy for the coming months. The overall Rural Main Street Index released on Thursday rose to 57.5 in November, from October's 56.6. Any score above 50 on a 100-point scale suggests a growing economy. The confidence index, which reflects expectations for the economy 6 months out, sank from 45.6 from October's 50.7. Creighton University economist Ernie Goss attributes the lack of confidence to the looming fiscal cliff and the lack of federal farm and energy bills coming out of Congress. A five-member team of local responders from Shelby County dispatched to assist with Superstorm Sandy arrived home this week after having spent more than 3 weeks riding out the storm in Farmingdale, New York. Two teams were sent out during the storm to ensure that water and food were on the ground ready for use when the sun rose the day after the storm hit. Shelby County emergency management officials report the teams served millions of meals and thousands of gallons of drinking water. Prior to coming home, the team paid a visit to Ground Zero, the site of the World Trade Center attacks on September 11, 2001. The team comprised of Jason Wickheiser, Shelby County Emergency Medical Services Coordinator, also Chad Kroger, Jordan Sanders, Andrea Seistad, and Ryan Nelson, worked long hours under stressful conditions. They worked a total of 256 hours over a 16-day assignment, or breaking down to about 16 hours per day. Many of those hours went by without a break, with the team being on their feet for the entire time. In addition to riding out winds of 75 to 85 miles per hour during the height of the storm, the team worked as the snow fell the following week. Officials say the experience they gained in incident command and disaster response will be used to assist in training other responders locally. The crew also made many new friends and contacts during their stint. They left Des Moines on October 28th en route to New York and returned to Harlan on Tuesday. Many of those same team members assisted in fighting wildfires in the western U.S. in early August and September and had just returned to Iowa before being mobilized for deployment to the East Coast. The Shelby County Emergency Management Agency says it will discontinue the biweekly local fire danger updates. EMA officials say the decision was made after a general consensus of the majority of the fire chiefs in Shelby County recommended the move. Field work in the county is nearly complete now, if not already complete, and although the quantity of fuel which would make control of fires difficult is greatly diminished, officials say the area remains very dry and anyone planning a large burn is encouraged to contact the EMA and their local fire chief. A 21-year-old man accused of impersonating an airline employee at the Omaha airport has pleaded guilty. Timothy Foster of Omaha admitted entering a secured area at Epley Airfield under false pretenses. Foster made his plea Wednesday in federal court in Omaha. According to the criminal complaint, Foster pretended to be a United Airlines employee for 6 weeks, starting in April. The complaint says he accessed restricted areas in a computer system of United Airlines and displayed a security badge that he'd made. Foster faces up to 6 months behind bars and a $5,000 fine. His sentencing is scheduled for February 26th. A study says the number of abortions in Iowa hasn't risen since Planned Parenthood began a remote-control abortion pill distribution method in 2008. A study released Thursday by the American Journal of Public Health examined the number of abortions in the 2 years before and after the telemedicine abortions began in Iowa. The system lets women visit clinics and take pills administered by doctors after video conferences. Proponents say the system is safe, legal, and extends abortion access to rural areas. Opponents say the system isn't safe because doctors have little in-person oversight and because the woman can suffer complications after leaving the clinics with some of the drugs necessary to complete the abortions at their home. Iowa's sex offender registry is getting an upgrade thanks to a nearly $110,000 federal grant. Terry Kalman with the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation says the money will be used by local sheriff's offices to purchase needed equipment. Kalman says the equipment involves things like laptop computers, digital cameras for taking offenders' pictures, and electronic signature pads so they can continue the digital move toward a paperless project. Iowa sheriff's offices register and monitor more than 5,700 sex offenders statewide. Dozens of sheriffs said they need equipment upgrades to set up remote registration stations and avoid getting delays in information posted. Collins said they hope to continue to get the resources spread out across the state, and he believes they'll have three-quarters of the counties affected by this particular grant. Last year, Iowa Sex Offender Registry emailed more than 283,000 notifications on the movement of offenders and changes in relevant information. The website, www.iowasexoffender.com, averages over 1 million page views per month. Officials say they're discussing the details of a deal for a $1.5 billion data center in the Des Moines suburb of Altoona. The Des Moines Register says lawyers were involved in conversations last week about infrastructure, development agreements, and contracts with the still unnamed company. Altoona City Administrator Jeff Mark told the City Council the project is nearing a point at which the company will reveal itself. He said the parties involved want to sign a contract and buy land before January. The City Council rezoned land in June to support a site plan with three buildings. Iowa is believed to be competing with a site in Kearney, Nebraska. Nebraska Department of Economic Development Director Catherine Lang said there haven't been recent developments with the Kearney project. Iowa's unclaimed property, including rocks, people's ashes, and baseball cards, will be offered in an online auction beginning November 26th. Iowa Treasurer Mike Fitzgerald said Wednesday that 100 lots are being prepared for the eBay auction. The state has acquired the property from abandoned safe deposit boxes and other sources after a period of time spelled out by Iowa law. Fitzgerald said the state has returned more than $154 million worth of unclaimed property over the years. Last year, his office took possession of an estimated $27 million in unclaimed property. And the names of two Iowans have been sent to the White House for consideration in filling a federal judgeship. Senator Tom Harkin has recommended federal defender Jane Kelly, who serves the Northern District of Iowa, and Mary Tabor, a judge on the Iowa Appeals Court. The opening comes from the pending retirement of Judge Michael Malloy, a circuit judge on the 8th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. Tabor has been on the state appeals court since May of 2010. From 1993 until 2010, she worked in the Criminal Appeals Bureau of the Iowa Justice Department. Kelly has been a federal defender in Cedar Rapids since 1994. Taking a look at world headlines, former CIA Director David Petraeus is testifying in a closed hearing before the House Intelligence Committee this morning. Lawmakers are asking for details about the September 11th attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, Libya, that killed the U.S. ambassador and three other Americans. Petraeus is not expected to testify about his affair with biographer Paula Broadwell or the harassing emails she sent a Florida woman that led to the FBI investigation that uncovered the affair. President Obama and congressional leaders are scheduled to sit down at the White House today to work on a budget compromise that would prevent a series of tax hikes and automatic spending cuts. All sides say they want to avoid going over the so-called fiscal cliff that economists and business leaders warn could send the economy back into a recession. It'll be a small group that meets today with House Speaker John Boehner, Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, and Republican Senate Leader Mitch McConnell joining Obama and Vice President Joe Biden. Overseas, Egypt's prime minister is calling on Israel to halt its military operation against Palestinian forces in the Gaza Strip. The Islamist government in Cairo recalled its ambassador in protest and has dispatched its prime minister to the Palestinian territory in a show of solidarity with Gaza's Hamas rulers. Israel said it would hold its fire while Egypt's prime minister is in the territory as long as the Palestinians do likewise. But militants have continued to fire rockets into Israel and for a second straight day targeted Tel Aviv with one of those rockets. News time is 8:11.
Excuse me?
I'm sorry.
Pardon?
What?
I didn't hear you. What'd you say?
This is Doug Leonard, audiologist at ASI. Even though there are many ways to politely tell someone you didn't hear them, not being able to understand what people are saying to you is frustrating for everyone. Because hearing loss happens gradually, many times you and those around you develop coping behaviors to keep the communication flowing. Speaking louder, lip reading, and eventually the frequent request to repeat. But because those behaviors don't address the real source of frustration, your hearing loss, it can become a hearing problem for everyone involved. The best way to avoid the frustration is to recognize the real culprit and to take action. A hearing evaluation is the first step. Even if what you're experiencing is a very mild hearing loss and hearing aids are not needed, knowing what's going on allows you to stay on top of your hearing loss. No one wants a conversation that revolves around,
excuse me?
I'm sorry.
Pardon?
I didn't hear you. What did you say?
Call today. ASI with offices in Atlantic, Audubon, Manning, and Carroll.
In the funeral announcements, Gary Lee Madden, age 70 of Avoca, died Tuesday at Bergen Mercy Medical Center. Funeral services for Gary Madden will be this morning at 10 o'clock at Trinity Lutheran Church in Avoca. Pauly Jones Funeral Home in Avoca has arrangements. Edith Schwizo, age 82 of Manila and formerly of Irwin, died Tuesday at the Manila Manor. Funeral services for Edith Schwizo will be held today at 10:30 at the United Methodist Church in Irwin. Odie Funeral Home in Manila has arrangements. Russell Kevin Stalter, age 62 of Stewart, died Sunday at his home. Funeral services for Russell Stalter will be today at 11 a.m. at the All Saints Catholic Church in Stewart. Johnson Family Funeral Home in Stewart has arrangements. Marilyn K. Sawyers, age 58 of Council Bluffs, died Monday at her home. Funeral services for Marilyn Sawyers will be this afternoon at 1 o'clock at the Cudler, O'Neill, Meyer, and Woodring Bayless Park Chapel in Council Bluffs. Lavetta Burkhalter, age 92 of Creston, died Tuesday at the Crest Haven Care Center. Funeral services for Lavetta Burkhalter will be Saturday at 10:30 at the First Christian Church, Disciples of Christ, in Creston. Powers Funeral Home in Creston has the arrangements. Darlene Mavis Fritz, age 81 of Pocahontas and formerly of Guthrie Center, died Wednesday. Funeral services for Darlene Fritz will be tomorrow at 10:30 at the Emanuel Lutheran Church in Guthrie Center. Twig Funeral Home in Guthrie Center has arrangements. Richard Richter, age 87 of Wyota, died Tuesday at the Salem Lutheran Home in Elkhorn. Funeral services for Richard Richter will be held Saturday at 10:30 at the St. Peter and Paul Catholic Church in Atlantic. Hockenberry Family Care in Atlantic has the arrangements. Kenneth Knutson, age 84 of Onawa, died Tuesday at the Elmwood Care Center. Funeral services for Kenneth Knutson will be Saturday at 11 a.m. at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Irwin. Pauly Jones Funeral Home in Harlan has the arrangements. Keith Johnson, age 69 of Pilot Mountain, North Carolina, and formerly of Harlan, died in November of 2011. Celebration of life services for Keith Johnson will be Saturday at 1 o'clock at the Burmeister Johansson Funeral Home in Harlan. Sherry Lynn Alder, age 50 of Atlantic, died Tuesday at her home. A memorial visitation for Sherry Alder will be held on Saturday from 2 until 4 p.m. in the main lounge at the Heritage House in Atlantic. Hockenberry Family Care in Atlantic has the arrangements. And Jesse Smith, age 100 of Avoca, died Monday at Avoca Nursing and Rehab. Graveside services for Jesse Smith will be held at a later date. Pauly Jones Funeral Home in Avoca has the arrangements. The news and funeral announcements were brought to you this hour by ASI, Audiology and Hearing Instruments at 601 Poplar in Atlantic. Call 243-5796. I'm Rick Hansen reporting.